Ramban Parshas Miketz. So the Parsha begins with the two dreams of Paro. Paro dreams first about the cows and then about the wheat stalks. So the dream about the cows is there are seven fat cows, as we all know, and then the seven skinny cows come next to them and eat them up. The skinny cows eat the fat cows. The skinny cows do not get any fatter. And Paro wakes up, and basically the same thing with the wheat stalks. So those both are remnants, the Ramban says, to Parnassa, of course. The wheat stalks, we understand. The bad wheat stalks eating the good wheat stalks. Wheat is the food that you eat. And the cows are the ones that plow, that makes the wheat. And wheat, bread is synonymous with plowing. They always go together. Like as man asherin charish v'katzir, plowing is the first step, the katzir is the end, the last step. But so cows are synonymous with plowing, and therefore also food. Anyway, so the Ramban explains that I think this is a very important point. We know, you know, Yosef gets called to interpret these dreams, and he does something that maybe you wouldn't have expected. Yosef not only tells Paro what the dreams mean, that they mean that there's going to be seven good years and two bad years, seven bad years, rather. But Yosef also goes and tells Paro, here's what you should do about it. You should hire someone who's going to know what he's doing with the field, you know, gather all the grains during the plentiful years and put them away so that you'll have food for the bad years. So it just sounds like Yosef's just giving free advice, because, like, what does it have to do with the dream? The dream was, as we know, that the bad years would eat up the good years, which Rashi tells us means that the bad years will be so bad, they'll make us forget the goodness of the good years. That's Rashi. So then, what happened with Yosef comes and just gives free advice? Like, it seems highly inappropriate. I mean, it's nice to give advice, but this is a guy from prison talking to the Pharaoh. Like, I mean, I would think if most of us were called to interpret a dream, we would do just that. We wouldn't, like, stick in our two cents. By the way, here's an idea. Why don't you try and gather a lot of food during those plentiful years? So you'll have it for the famine years. Like, who asked you for your advice? What's the shot in that? So the Ramban explains, no, this is the dream. The dream has all this in it. When it says that the skinny cows eat the fat cows, it doesn't mean that they'll make us forget the happiness. It means during the dream itself was saying that during the skinny years, you will eat the fat years, as in, like, the things that grow during the good years, during the bad years, you'll physically eat them. The skinny cows will eat the fat cows, meaning during the times of famine, you will eat the food from before the famine when things were plentiful. So, and it says that the skinny cows did not get any fatter. That is to say, it's not going to be great. You're just going to survive. That's it. You're going to stay skinny, but you're going to survive. So the point is that when Yosef came and gave and said you should gather all the food from the plentiful years and save it so you have food to eat during the bad years, that wasn't advice. That was interpretation of the dream. No one asked her his advice. Yosef was saying, this is what the dream means. Included in this dream is that there's going to be seven bad years, but also included in the dream is that you're going to use the food from the first years to sustain yourselves during the second years. So that's why Yosef was talking about it. Okay, now the Ramban says another important point, which is that the plentiful years were only in Egypt. The bad years, though, were everywhere. You got that? So there was, during the famine years, there was famine in all the surrounding areas, but during the plentiful years, it was not so plentiful anywhere else. Because the psukim say, he's saying this from the psukim, not from, like, Svara. He said the psukim are mashma that way. It says, there was sava gadol b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. And every time it talks about the sava, it talks about Asher Hayah b'eretz Mitzrayim. But by the famine, it says b'chol ha'aratzos, and everyone ever came to them. So the Ramban says, it sounds like the good years were, Egypt had a particularly good 7 years, not the surrounding areas, but the famine affected all the surrounding areas, which explains, says the Ramban, why everybody wasn't putting away food. Because the Ramban said everyone knew about Yosef's dream eventually. I mean, it became very famous. Probably his whole story became very famous. And everyone knew that Egypt was storing away grain because of this dream, and nobody else did. Why did nobody else do it and have to come to Egypt? The answer is because nobody had the plentiful food to put away. Everybody else had regular years. Egypt had a super good 7 years. Everybody else had regular years, and therefore during the bad years, they were stuck. So now, as we said, even though Yosef had not given free advice, he was just interpreting the dream, there was something he threw in there to promote himself, and that is that Paro should appoint a capable guy to do this. That, the Ramban says, that was self-promotion. He was trying to hint that Paro should use him because he's a smart guy. Look, he interprets his dream. Probably want a smart guy to do this for you. That was just subtle self-promotion, that he should be taken out of jail to do that. As far as what, why do you need a Chacham Benavim to do that? I don't know. Maybe you think it's obvious. The Ramban just points out that it's there are things to do to make grain not rot. You have to know what to mix in with it. And also you have to know how to divide it up in a way that makes sense, that'll work, and to be able to have others to leftover stuff to sell other people. Anyway, that's why you needed a Chacham Benavim. Okay, as we all know, Paro loves the idea, and he makes him the Mishnah LeMelech, second in command. He gives him his ring, which you can use to sign anything, basically. And then he calls him Tzafnas Paneach. What does the word Tzafnas Paneach mean? So he brings the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says it's an Egyptian word. We don't know exactly what it is. So the Ramban thinks, no, they just gave him a Egyptian. The Egyptians gave him a Hebrew name, because Tzafnas Paneach means Hamefaneach Ne'alamim. It reveals the hidden. That's Tzafnas Paneach. He's Mefaneach. He reveals the Tzafon, the hidden. And he says, don't be surprised that Egyptians called him a Hebrew title. They knew he was Hebrew. They knew he was Jewish, so they gave him a Jewish title, a Chodo. And says the Ramban, same thing with Moshe. Right? We'll learn about Moshe. Moshe was called Moshe Kimina Maya Mishisiu. That's Hebrew. So some people say, right, there's this book the Ramban quotes, the Sifri HaMitzrim, that referred to Moshe as Monius. So Ramban says, don't think like what a lot of people think. Oh, see, Moshe's real name was Monius, because that's what he's called in the Egyptian writings, Monius. His name was probably really Monius, and the Torah did some shtick and renamed him Moshe, Chas V'Shalom. Ramban says, no, his name was Moshe. And either she learned a little Hebrew, or the Chvodo they gave, whatever it is, but the Monius is just like reading it in a translation of English, where it would say Moses. It doesn't mean that that was his actual name. It's just when you're writing a book in Egyptian, you call it, or whatever you would call it, the translation in your language. So Moshe becomes Moses. It doesn't mean that Bas Paro didn't name him Moshe. It just means when you're writing a book in another language, you translate it into that language. So the fact that it says Monius does not mean his name was really Monius. His name was Moshe. Now, this is contrary to what others say, but this is what the Ramban says. Ramban says, no, his name was Moshe. And it's the same thing like this Tzafnas Paneach. It's also a Hebrew name. So they did it Lechodim because they knew they came from Yehudim, from people. So they used their language for them. Okay, then it says that Yosef was given a wife, Asnas, daughter of Potipharah, Kohen On. What's a Kohen On? Kohen On mean? Ramban said the word Kohen just means servant, someone who provides a service. It doesn't have to be religious. Could be a Kohen of something. It just means you're a servant of them. Okay, so be that as it may, that that's what the word means, Kohen. The Ramban sounds like he, based on what Chazal say, that he was a Kohen to Avodah Zarah, but his name had been Potiphar. It got switched to Potipharah when he became a Sris. So people derisively called him Potipharah. But regardless, he was a Sar Laparo. He was an officer. So what the Ramban explains happened is when they started calling him Potipharah after he became a Sris, so he was embarrassed by it, and eventually he retired from working in the government and decided to become a priest in the temple. Okay, and he says, Kichem Minig HaNichbadim. It's the retirement job, apparently, of people in government work, or chash of a people, that they become a Kamer Lavodah Zarah, or they go into religious work later. don't know. Anyway, that's what happened. But the same thing with Yisro also was called Kohen Minyan. Anyway, he thinks it means Avodah Zarah. Even though the word Kohen doesn't have to mean that, but based on Chazal, he thinks that he was a priest for Avodah Zarah. He was an officer for Pyro. That was after he retired. That goes to this wrist thing. Okay, so then the Torah tells us about there was the plentiful lands, plentiful years, and there was also, then came the famine years. So, again, it says, Vatechilena Sheva, and Pasuk Nun Dalad, Vatechilena Sheva Shnei Harav Lavok, Asher Ma Yosef, Hirav B'chal Ratzos, like we said, there was a famine in all the nearby lands. And the Rabbi quotes a Bereshis Rabbah, a Medrash, that says, B'shalash Ratzos, I'm just reading because it's interesting, B'shalash Ratzos, Pinkia, Arabia, Palestine. I didn't know that name went back that far to Bereshis Rabbah. That's a very long time ago. Anyway, like I said, just thought it was interesting. This Medrash brings that the nearby lands to Egypt were Arabia, Palestine, and Phoenicia. Okay. That says Phoenicia. I mean, just to be clear, we the Torah talks about the Plishtim. This is not Plishtim with a shin, this is with a samach, Palestinai. Anyway, okay, moving right along. Okay, now this is interesting also, the Psukim say about the famine, it goes like this. Vatirav kol Eretz Mitzrayim was hungry. Vayitzak ha'amel paro lalechem, they complained to paro for food. Vayimar paro l'chametzim l'chol Yosef, go to Yosef, do whatever he says. And what do you think the next pasuk should be? And they came to Yosef. That's not the next pasuk. The next pasuk is Vaharav Hayal Pnei Chal Aretz Veiftach Yosef Et Kol Asher Behem Veishbar Adam Mitzrayim Veiechzak Arav Mitzrayim. It says they went. Paro said, "Go to Yosef." The next pasuk is, and the famine was Al Pnei Chal Aretz. And then Yosef opened up the food of Mitzrayim, and the Rav was very difficult. So the Ramban says he's trying to tell you that Yosef did not just give it out just because they were a little bit hungry. He says people kvetch when things aren't going well, they freak out. Yosef knew there's limited stuff here, so he did not give them the second they were kvetching about it. It's when it got bad, that's when he opened it up to give to everybody. Okay, then we have the story of Yosef's brothers coming down. So it says, Vayar Yosef Esachav Vayakireim, Yosef recognized his brothers. Vayisna Keraleim. What does that mean, Vayisna Keraleim? So Rashi says, it's from the Lashon Nachri, he made himself like a stranger to them. Ramban says it means he dressed up. He made it so that they wouldn't recognize him. He pulled his crown, his mitznefes, whatever, his turban down lower, so that they couldn't see his face so low and they wouldn't be able to recognize him. Then the Ramban gives another possibility that does mean in his words, but it means he was strange to them. He was like speaking strangely. He acted strangely to them, and that he spoke very strongly against them when they didn't come, there was no reason to speak strongly against them. Okay, now we come to another fundamental point. We have at least two fundamental points here. One was the one we explained before, why Yosef tried to tell Paro advice. And this second Ramban is, why did Yosef go through this whole story, the whole charade? Why didn't he just tell his brother straight up, "Hi, I'm Yosef, go bring down my father"? His father must have been in terrible distress. We know his father was in terrible distress that Yosef was not there. And there's a lot of questions about this. Why did Yosef never send any letters to his dad or tell his dad to come join him? And certainly once he became Mishneh LaMelech, why in the world did he not go visit his dad? Or at least send a letter to his father? And then this whole story, this whole charade, and he pretends he doesn't know them, and he throws them in jail, and he puts Shimon in jail, and says, bring down Binyamin, and then the whole business. What was the point of it all? Why didn't he just talk straight to them? Especially in light of the fact that his father was suffering. That surely would have been seemingly a terrible aveira to make his father suffer for no reason. Okay, so the answer to this is the dreams. Yosef knew that those dreams were not Stam dreams. They were Nevuah. They were going to happen. And here's a big chiddush over here. Yosef understood that to be his mission, to make sure those dreams come true. I mean, I would have thought if you get a Nevuah, you know, not my problem. Wait till they happen. Isn't that what a Nevuah is? Wait till it happens. So that's not what we see here. We see that, and the Rabban basically says this, that it was Yosef's job to make them happen. In the footnotes here, they bring what we said earlier, a different Ramban. We mentioned earlier that had Paro and the Mitzrim just enslaved the Jews without causing them suffering, meaning extra suffering, like throwing the firstborn into the sea and that kind of stuff, or giving them too much tzaras, then they wouldn't have been blamed for what they did. What do you mean? Even putting them, making them slaves would have been bad. That wouldn't have been way of punishment to the Mitzrim. So it's the same thing. If you know there's a nevuah that something's supposed to happen, making it happen is not an avera, rather a mitzvah. It's just the Mitzrim were extra cruel to them and threw their kids into a river. That was not part of the nevuah. So here the Ramban sees, in other words, the Ramban seems to understand it's your obligation to make the nevuah happen. Which is an amazing concept. You know what I mean? We know Mashiach is supposed to come, right? It's our job to make that nevuah happen. Anyway, but it's your job to make the nevuah happen. So Yosef thought it was his job, correctly, to make the nevuah happen. So therefore, how's he going to get all of his 11 brothers to bow down to him? So Binyamin has to come. To go to them, to go to Israel, and go have them bow down to him, you know, that wouldn't have worked. They're not going to, in Israel, they're not going to be bowed down to him. They had to come to Egypt. And how's he going to get all of them to come to Egypt? First 11 brothers, then, because that was dream number one. Then 11 brothers, plus everybody else, plus Yaakov, in the second dream. How's he going to make this all happen? This is how he made it happen. By coming up with this whole strategy that would force them to bring Binyamin down. And he says also this, the business with the Gaviyah at the end of the parsha, where he puts his special cup in Binyamin's bag. That was also to test the brothers. Part of it was to test the brothers' feelings towards Binyamin. The Ramban mentions this in connection to, like, why is he causing the brothers so much pain? So the Ramban was saying that his intention was not to cause the brothers pain. But rather, it was to make this nevuah happen. But as far as the thing with the cup at the end of the parsha, why he hid the cup in Binyamin's thing, that was to protect Binyamin, because he wasn't so sure that Binyamin was safe. Meaning, maybe they had hatred towards Binyamin. Why would Yosef think that they hate Binyamin? Well, maybe his father loved him after Yosef wasn't around, or maybe Binyamin got wind of the fact of, you know, why his brother disappeared, and he knew that they knew that he knew that they knew, and, you know, there was some kind of strife there. So he didn't want them walking, he didn't want Binyamin walking alone with them. I don't know if that was Yaakov's cheshbon too. But anyway, Yosef didn't want them walking along with them, so he had to do something to make sure he was safe when Binyamin finally came down. And the way to do that was if he stuck the cup in his pouch, so then one or two things would happen. So when Yosef sends his shlech to go get them, and he finds it in Binyamin's package, so they could either say, okay, yeah, he should die, go ahead, go take him, and then, you know, Yosef's shlech would just bring him back to Mitzrayim and keep him safe. Or they would all say, okay, we're all coming back with you, which is, of course, what they did, which would show that either way, so in any case, Binyamin would be safe. That was not to be Mitzar of the brothers. Sorry for that digression. But getting back to our point here, main point is that Yosef did this whole thing not to be Mitzar his brothers, and certainly not to be Mitzar his father, but it was the only way to make the nevuah come true. Okay, now how did the ruse go down? So Yosef starts yelling at them and says, Meraglim atem, Leros zever tzaretz banu basem. So just the Ramban wants to know, like, how did this go down? There's a million people coming to buy food. Why, what's the excuse even to call them Meraglim? So he says, one possibility is they all looked so chashev. So he said, all you guys here, like the whole board of directors came down to buy food. You have a million servants. Why would you guys come down and all of you together? And then, of course, there's the Chazal that says they came in 12 different entrances and then joined together. Okay. So that also looked suspicious. He used that. Okay, anyway, just fast-forwarding, so they all get thrown in jail, and they say, we know, the brothers say to themselves, we know this is happening to us. They say it's because, Hashem imanachnu alachinu asher inu tzaras nafsho, what'd they do wrong? Not that they sold him. They don't say that. They said, oh, because he was, you know, crying to us to save him, and we ignored him. So Rabban says that that cruelty, that was a bigger avera than the selling itself. And he says, Rabban suggests in one version, that the Torah does not discuss this whole thing, that Yosef crying to them and them ignoring him, because the Torah doesn't want to be ma'arich in the details, because that's the covet of the Shvatim. But here it's hinting to us. And then we have Begam Damo Hinedrash. They were saying it's because of what happened to Yosef that is happening to us. Begam Damo Hinedrash. What's Gam Damo? So, Ramban explains that even though they didn't kill him, it's going to be Nechshav to them like they killed him, because they caused his death. If they did cause his death, because they said he wasn't used to working, and now that he became an Eved, he might have died over it, and that would be considered to them as if they killed him. Even though obviously it would be a grammar, but it was as if. And he also makes Chazar make a drasha, Gam Damo means Damo V'Dam Zakin, his death and the father's death. Not that Yaakov died either, but maybe because the Tzara would cause him to die sooner. That's my understanding of that. Okay, anyway, so we know the story that Yosef arrests Shimon. The rest of them go up to go get back Binyamin. And Yaakov says, absolutely not, I'm not sending Binyamin with you. So one of the things, Reuben says, oh, just send him, and if anything happens to Binyamin, Eshnei Banai Tamis. So he says, you can slay my two sons if I don't bring him back. So the Ramban explains, that doesn't mean literally nobody's slaying anybody, obviously. It means he accepts upon himself a curse that his son should die if he doesn't bring him back. And that's like a kefil, because Binyamin, he would lose one son, Binyamin, and Reuben was willing to lose two. Yaakov loses Yosef, that's one son, and Reuben was willing to lose two of his sons. He had four, he was willing to lose two. It's important to know, Reuven, when he says Shnei Banai Tamis, he had more than two, he had four. He was willing to let two die as like a knas on himself. Okay. Now, this is actually my favorite Rambam. If you could have a favorite, whatever. In this week's parasha, it says, when Yosef says, okay, you remember they ran out of food, and Yehuda says to him, okay, we're out of food, we need to go now. We could have come back a million times in this interim. So Yaakov says, okay, I have no choice, so go, and here's what you should bring him, and he davens for them. He says, V'kel shakai yitin lachem rachem in lefnei ish, and Hashem should give you mercy in front of this person. V'shilach lachem esachichem acher v'es binyamin. I don't know if I ever stopped to think about this, but it says, V'shilach lachem esachichem acher v'es binyamin. Hashem will send you your brother, the other guy, and Binyamin. Your brother, the other guy. So the Ramban says, you know, Shimon's in jail, right? Yaakov does not send down anybody to save him. And the Ramban says, it sounds like because they ran out of food, they had no choice. What if they wouldn't have ran out of food? He would have sat there forever. It sounds like because Yaakov was concerned that something happened to Binyamin. Okay. Probably in a normal scenario, I mean, typically you would think a normal scenario, you would think that someone would take the risk, send Binyamin down, maybe you'll get Shimon back. If you don't send someone down, you're definitely not getting Shimon back. So send everyone down there, you know, send all the kids down there. Hopefully nothing will happen to Binyamin, and hopefully you get Shimon back, but you're for sure going to lose Shimon, so you got to try to save Shimon. Anyway, but Yaakov doesn't do that because he's afraid he might lose Binyamin and therefore definitely lose Shimon. You know, he wouldn't be dead, okay, but he'd be in jail forever. Anyway, it seems unusual. Anyway, the other point is, it's the words of the Pasuk. It's just, when he points it out, it's like, how did you, to me, I was thinking, how did I not think about this? V'shilach alchem asacheichem acher v'es Binyamin, your other brother and Binyamin. Rashi has to tell you, that's Shimon, by the way. Binyamin has a name. Why does Shimon just get called the other brother? The Ramban says, I'll read it. Niral derech hapshat ki lo haya Shimon rotzei aviv. Because Yaakov was not okay with Shimon. He was not rotzei lefanov. It says, perhaps, the Ramban says, perhaps because of what happened in Shechem. I would have said perhaps because of, he says, he was suspicious of him with Yosef, maybe. I'm not sure. But regardless, he called him the other son in Binyamin. So the Ramban says, he was not happy with him. Then the Ramban goes on to bring a Medrash that talks about this, like the Klal Yisrael in general. And when it says, in other words, the future of Klal Yisrael, it's V'kel Shekayiti and Lechem Rachem and Lefnei Ha'ish, who's the Ish, that's Hashem. And he will send your brothers, Elu Hashvatim, and then the last two are Acher V'es Binyamin. Who's Acher? That's Yehuda. Why is Yehuda called Acher? I don't know. But Hashem, La'asid Lavo, when Mashiach comes, will send you your brothers, that's what it sounds like to me, that's the Shvatim, Acher V'es Binyamin, Yehuda Binyamin, Anika Sher Shechalti B'chur Ben Rishon, Shechalti B'chur Ben Sheni, Lo Eshkalod, he won't be in Avelis again. So the Ramban says, Hakavona ki yiridas Yaakov the Mitzrayim yirmos legalos seinu biyad Edom. Ramban says this in several places, that the going down, the whole process, because we're just here in the process here, the whole process of Yaakov going down to Mitzrayim would be a remez to our galos in Edo. And Yaakov, it seems, knew that, so this was a shtickel tefillah about the future as well. Okay, then he says, so take Binyamin down, and hopefully all will be good. And he'll send back Binyamin. Vani kasher shacholti shacholti. What's that mean? Ramban says it means the same thing as Vani kasher avadati avadati by Megillas Esther. Yaakov was trying to say, I got nothing to lose over here. I'm not going to be in mourning again. I'm already in endless mourning because of Yosef. So Vani kasher shacholti shacholti. If I'm going to be in mourning because of Binyamin, if something happens, I'm already in mourning. I can't be more in mourning than I am now. In other words, he'll always be in mourning. And that's the same kasher avadati avadati, which means I'm already lost. I'm already lost. Why is she already lost? Either because she was stuck in the king's palace. Why, for whatever reason, she felt lost. She was already lost, so I can't be more lost. That's Yaakov was saying, I'm already in mourning anyway. And Esther was saying, I'm already lost. And therefore, if I go in and I get killed, I'm lost anyway. It's interesting, more the Megillas Esther version of that, that the Ramban is saying. She felt lost anyway because of being in the palace. And therefore, if she dies, she's dead anyway. That's what it sounds like. She's gone anyway. You know, if that's the story, it makes it a much less happy story. But, the Purim story had a happy ending. Mostly happy. I mean, Mordechai was promoted, so maybe she had some happiness from that she was able to hang out or whatever, be more with Mordechai. But she did remain remarried to Achashverosh for the rest of her life, and that was part of Avadati Avadati. Okay, next. Okay, anyway, they did get food, though. They go back with their food, and Yosef sends back the cash with them, without them knowing somehow. How is that possible? So Ramban explains that people would come with cash in their bags, and the guy was supposed to take out the cash and fill it with grain. Here, the guy left the cash in. So they weren't suspecting anything, and they didn't have to pay anything. That's how it was done without them knowing. Okay, then we have when they get caught with the gvia, Binyamin gets caught with the gvia, he says, "Hu nachesh nachesh bo." So the Ramban says what that means. I mean, I always thought it meant he does nichush. Nichush is like superstitions. He did things, or whatever, to know, to divination, to know who took his stuff, or to know stuff. So, hu nachesh nachesh bo, you would think that means he uses it to see the future. But the Ramban says, no, not that he uses it to see the future, but he used future tellers to see where his cup was. And that's how he knew to run after, meaning there was a million people coming to get food. How did he know that Yosef know that the brother stole it? So that was what he was explaining, who nachesh nachesh bo. So he went to Nichush tellers in general, and that's how he knew, because they told him that Yosef had it. And we'll stop here.